We are rolling.
Ooh, good. About to hit that fourth gear. Let's do it.
It's a hot, sexy death summer.
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
Johnny!
And wow, welcome to the show. This week, that's a very MTV style entrance, just like our movie.
So. Hey, I'm Kurt Loder and nobody's going to remember me. I'm sorry, Kurt Loder.
This week, as part of our last film in our summer series, we will review The Lost Boys. And John will give us the plot in 5 words. We'll give our first thoughts. We'll go to deep spoiler analysis. But first, TV Corner, episode 4 of John's most memorable show, Chapelwaite.
Chapelwaite. Woo!
Chapelwaite. Yeah.
Oh, woo! Man. I don't dislike it, but I'm still upset that From doesn't have season 2 out yet.
I know. So... I'll say this, a lot of shit happened. I feel like a lot of shit got cleared up.
Yeah.
We know exactly. So I actually kind of, in my respect, made it more interesting. I thought a lot of the things they revealed in this episode would be things they would reveal later in the show as kind of heading to our finale. But now, you know, I think it's 10 episodes total, maybe less. We're on episode 4, so maybe we're halfway, almost halfway, and I feel like they have set the table already, so I'm curious as to where the show may end up.
And let's just get this out there. Holy shit, were you going to call that Stephen and Philip Boone were alive? It's like, I understand, in their universe, it's a big reveal, but I feel like they were trying to like shoot it like, oh, holy shit, they are alive. And it's like, yeah. Yeah,
they've been alive.
No duh.
Yeah. So we have, so they're definitely vampires, to say the least. And the thing that they visit their cousin and his family, sort of enticing them, wanting them to join. Right? It seems like they're after the little girl, the little girl with the bad leg,
right?
I believe, right? And the other interesting thing, before you get more into it, that I thought was interesting was that there's a cult or something for Jacob.
Yeah, dedicated to them. Yeah, that was so, that's the apple woman. The
apple woman, yeah, with the worms.
So I guess she's like Philip Boone's like number one goon or whatever you want to call her. But yeah, like this was like a depressing episode at the beginning. I do recall, what's his name? Jacob, right? Am I getting that wrong? Charles. Where the fuck am I getting Jacob from?
Jacob is the name they referenced. They described them in the summary here as acolytes, which is all those women that showed up at his house and are men. Was it men and women? I saw mostly
both.
Women.
Yeah, both. Yeah, it was both.
Okay, both. Yeah. So they mentioned the name Jacob. So they want him, they want, what's his face, our protagonist Charles, to get the book for Jacob.
Yeah. And also, so the beginning starts off with Charles Boone is having a very awkward conversation with Rebecca. Because Rebecca is under the impression that he is not well, and will like, she straight up asks him like, am I in danger? And he can't give a good answer, and he basically says like, I don't want to turn into my father or whatever. And he talks about that night, and how his father had shifted and it wasn't the same person he knew. It was a completely different person. So he is about to check himself into that insane asylum, right? Before they find that weird crawl space that he's like, let me go investigate alone. And then later on in the episode, he decides, like, towards the end, right? He's like, I got to do this one alone. Like, what is wrong with him?
Yeah.
It's enough that he got, like, jumped, like, literally, a couple of days before. And he's been through a lot. So I don't know why he's, like, I guess it's, like, a captain sort of thing to do. Like, a selfless act, almost.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's probably thinking of his kids. He's very young kids and his, and what's her face, Rebecca. He probably feels like he needs to be the one to do all these things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And his daughter's, like, super butthurt about him almost, like, hitting her. When, again, just to reiterate, she decides to walk straight in and, like, almost directly behind him when he's going ape shit on a wall with like a hammer or whatever. I don't know what she expected. He's like clearly not, he's like hyper focused.
Wasn't he so screaming all also? She's like, he's like, ah, 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 ah. I'm gonna go check what Stan's doing.
It's like, I'm sure back in this era, people were probably the same. If you like snuck up on somebody, there's like a 50-50 chance you're gonna get smacked out of an impulse, right? Like, so anyway, all I'm saying is I condone hitting children. All right, moving on. So just kidding, disclaimer.
Maybe these children.
Yeah.
Maybe these children. These kids.
Yeah. Listen here, douchey 2000s puka shell necklace wearing girl. I'm just kidding. So she's like real sad and like kind of hates her dad now, and everybody else is kind of on the dad's side. Like the eldest sister is very like adamant about like, no, he's fine, it's just there's a lot going on. Like she's being the most understanding. But yeah, they go through, he decides to go through the crawl space, finds the other section of the house, which is like directly attached to the house. You just got to like climb in through a tunnel from the barn. And then that's when the youngest daughter is upset about the whole thing and just decides to walk out alone. Even though Charles had some pretty specific instructions about keeping the family together. She walks out, walks away. And then that's when we get introduced to Charles Boone. Not Charles Boone. What's his name? Stephen. Yes. Stephen Boone is hanging out, trying to like convince her to like sit down and talk with her about her mom still being alive, which may or may not be the truth. And then, yeah, you get Jacob Boone right before that, right? Like he's feasting on the sheriff or the constable, whatever, his wife. And yes. Emily Hampshire walks in on that and sees Jacob Boone, and now she's like convinced, like, okay, Charles needs help. He's being like, you know, so she's trying to do all that at the same time. And then, Charles is able to like find a way through, I think the youngest daughter's bedroom, right? The little door was there. I'm pretty sure that's where it was at. And walks stops, Stephen. And then right before he shoots him and he falls through the window, he tells him, what does he say? He says something like, stay away from my family, Stephen, or whatever. And he's like, I can't do that. And he kind of, in a sense to me, was saying, you really need to find that book. You really need to do this for yourself. And it was almost like, I can't stop attacking your family sort of deal. Like, I can't help this. That's the way I read it, because it seems like Stephen really wants to help Charles, but he really can't.
That's correct. I like that we finally, like I said, I think this is very forthright in that we finally see Stephen, we see Philip, there's no more mystery. I like that what's her name, Emily Hampshire's character, told the sheriff, so we're no longer going to play this game of like, but I don't know if they're alive or not, or whatever.
Oh, we'll see.
Be really dumb.
So far, I think the only people that have seen these people are this family, and it's not like anybody believes them to begin with.
Well, at least now this constable has reason to believe her, right? So.
Oh, yeah, because he did see the bite marks, which I got to say, Julian Richings does have a very narrow mouth. And yeah. I thought about it for a while because, like, the bite marks I thought were, like, so close together, right? So I was like, yeah, maybe the fangs kind of, like, invert a little bit. But I was like, oh, is that believable? And then I started thinking they probably got, like, Julian Richards to do, like, a bite mark on something and then just kind of, like, did a transfer. I don't think they're just like, oh, typically how far away are incisors from each other? Like, a centimeter? 2 centimeters? It's like 4 teeth. that's what's in between the incisors.
I think I'm looking at a picture right now of Julian Richings, and it seems like it is maybe his middle tooth and his two side teeth are the fangs.
Oh.
So he has his middle tooth is just like he has two fangs. So that's why it may appear different than, you know, like a vampire usually has it on the sides or whatever. Yeah. It's similar to like a snake or something. So.
Well, I'm actually a little bit confused. Do you think they're actually going to be vampires? I know this is supposed to be a prequel to Salem's Lot, but not once did I hear him go blah, blah. Because even in Salem's Lot, the vampire did that kind of once. I thought it was fucking hilarious. He's like, blah, blah. I was like, no.
Did he see his totally reflection? Vampires. All right. I don't know. I saw his reflection.
Oh.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, maybe, was there a reflection thing in Salem's Lot? I don't really recall. I don't really recall there being mirrors to even bother with that.
Yeah, I agree. I don't remember that being a thing or not. If it was, it's very forgettable.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't really remember. Because it seems like each of these stories kind of bend the rules a la Lost Boys.
Yeah. Right? Well, I didn't see hair extensions or him riding a motorcycle. Either. So. So I don't know what kind of vampires are these.
Not legit ones, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, that's... Julian Richings is a fabulous actor, but he's no, like, male model. Like Alex Winter.
No.
So.
No, he is no Alex Winter.
Let's go on record right now and say Julian Richards is no Alex Winter in look department. Yeah. That's the hill we're dying on.
I concur. Yeah.
And Boy stamp on that. So.
And it kind of seems painfully obvious that we really want to start talking about Lost Boys.
I just thought it'd be a fun comparison because they're both technically vampire stories, right?
So. Yeah, it's true. Well, not technically. I think pretty
yeah,
obvious.
Pretty obviously, yeah. But yeah, no, this was good. The other thing I remember is the priest is sleeping with the former acolyte. That's the woman who had the baby with the no eyes. That was the other little detail that we know who that is now. That she, I guess, was one of them. And she left to sleep with the priest. Is that the general idea there?
Sure. Yeah, I'm waiting for that to get more interesting, I'll be honest. Because otherwise, I don't care. But yeah, because like that's an interesting bit of information. But what's more interesting is one of the minions slices her own throat in front of the family.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And then
yeah.
They drag her body off anyway. I guess I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what happens in Chapel Wait. Episode 4. The Promised.
Lots of things happening. The Promised. Interesting. At least now they're going to talk more about like Stephen and Philip Boone. Probably do a little backstory on them.
Yeah.
You know, talk about you know, how they turned, what are they up to now? Kind of interesting.
Yeah, good shit. We'll see what happens. So, I'm into it now.
Yeah, I felt like they did a lot of things. These were, like I said, there's a lot of things that I thought would happen anyways, but now they've kind of got to them sooner than I expected. So now I'm curious as to where the show, what direction the show's going in overall.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So can we talk about the Lost Poison?
We can now talk about the Lost Boys. So, as our last movie in our summer series, we're reviewing The Lost Boys, of course, which makes complete sense. We're reviewing
Sexy Saxophone Guy.
Yes, yeah.
I'm going to learn that song one day. It took me all this time to realize how fucking badass that song is. Because it comes across as just such a silly thing, but when you're watching him play it in the movie, every fucking time when you see everybody's just like so fucking into it, I'm like, yeah, I'd be too, yeah. He's like, I don't know. He's just like shirtless and buff and ripped.
Yeah.
Just fucking aggressively dry humping the air. And that's our review of The Lost Boys. All right, thank you. We'll see you next week.
All right. John, let's do it proper. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
4. Jolie Schumacher's The Lost Boys. Coming in at 3. High fashion punks hanging around.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah.
God bless your soul, brother. I don't know if I should tell people my Kiefer Sutherland story. You let me know if it's appropriate. Remember when I met him at our bar and he's like, God bless your soul, brother. I guess I should. It's just that we have friend that has been exclusively with them for a very long time now, like a friend that's from the same area of Texas we're from. but maybe I'll tell the story anyway in a little bit. Coming in at 2, family realizes Santa Cruz sucks.
Murder capital of the world.
Or I should say Santa Carla, but it is Santa Cruz.
Santa Carla. Yeah.
Yeah. And coming in at 1, Schumacher's Hot, Sexy, Death, Summer.
This movie has it all. It's hot, it's sexy, there's death, and it's summer.
Summer. Yeah. So what is there's like a long-winded history about this film that I don't really quite remember a lot of, but it took forever to get made. They could never find the right actor, and Kiefer Sutherland came in after he cut his hair and did that shit. And they're like, he's perfect. It was not supposed to be really a vampires movie. It was be like a, I forgot. They changed the narrative of the movie like almost last minute, and then that's what they ended up shooting.
Well, the thing that I read was that I liked was it was the writer wanted to adapt. Okay, so the guy saw the story of Peter Pan as if he was a vampire, which is why it's called The Lost Boys, right? Which is green. That's where he got the name from.
Yeah, this makes sense. Androgynous looking. Yeah, it's all pieced together now.
And they want it. Kind of makes sense, right? He shows up only at Peter Pan shows up at night and shows up at a window, flies, has Lost Boys who will never age, and they want a mother. So it kind of story's all right there. Story's like kind of all there. I think they adapt that was the I guess the screenplay or the story, whoever created the story, that was his initial thought, was twisting the story of Peter Pan. And eventually, you know, it got rewritten a bunch of times and, you know, it changed a lot. But the initial idea is still there, which I think is actually really cool. That's a fun way to adapt a story, right?
Also, real quick, this is like, I don't mind Jason Patrick as an actor, but this is by far, in my opinion, the best role he's ever done.
No, it's, well, he's really good in Narc. Have you seen Narc?
Yeah, but it's not this movie.
Is that okay? True. True. He's,
You afraid to show your face to me, David?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what, aside from having a stellar cast, what's the most important contribution this movie gave the world? It's the first time the Coreys meet and are in a movie together.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Corey Haim, R.I.P., and Corey Feldman, who I believe is still alive.
He's, so. Yeah, he's still alive. He's still performing his Michael Jackson-inspired music stuff. Which, like, good for him.
Yeah.
Also, because he had such a horrible, like, go of it, because everybody's like, oh, he's fucking crazy. He keeps talking about how he was molested by big-time Hollywood producers, and then a little too late, but yep, he was telling the truth.
Like, yeah, he had a really fucked up
a little too late.
Victim of what is it, being a young actor or Hollywood star or whatever actor. So I'm assuming you loved this movie, because I'm not sure how to exactly tackle this review. I mean, it's a classic. I'm sure we've both seen it a million times.
I gotta admit, though, it's like, upon rewatching this for like the 100th millionth time, right?
Right.
Oh, for one, I thought it was funny because I saw it was like only like $5 to buy, and I was like, yeah, fuck yeah.
Oh, dude, I did the same thing. Yeah. I bought it.
Like, and as soon as I bought it, I was like, wait a second. I think I have like 2 copies of this fucking movie. I should have checked, but whatever. It's here now.
Yeah. On sale now.
Yeah, this is like, upon rewatching it again, it's like from beginning to end, I was like, this movie's a masterpiece. Got it. Okay. Sorry it's to just break hearts.
When did you, can you remember the first time you saw it? How about that? Let's start there. When was the first time you saw it?
It was on a VHS tape, back in the day when our parents would record like 3 or 4 movies on the same tape, right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
That had, damn, what was it? Harry and the Hendersons? The Lost Boys? And then it was a bunch of music videos that my dad used to just record them, let the tape record, and he would go to sleep. And this tape had, and this is like, these things were barely on the air, right? Prince's 1999, Aha's Take on Me. Fuck, I forgot what the last one was. I think it was Michael Jackson's Bad. So just imagine, like, I watched this all the time with my dad. We would watch the same 2 movies and then all these music videos over and over again. It was, I forgot what channel it was, but it was called Night Tracks, was the name of the music videos that would run.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah,
which is also kind of indicative of my age, I suppose. But that's what I used to do as a kid. I just rewatch those movies all the time.
Yeah. So
with to a point where when I would try to remember these movies, I could have sworn that what's that actor's name? He's really good. It's just I could have sworn Max? Not Max. That's the name of the dog.
Okay.
Oh, no, it is Max. It is Max. Edward Herman. I could have sworn Edward Herman was actually John Lithgow because of how many times I watched these movies back to back. I just could have sworn it was him.
Yeah, okay. I could see that.
It's also interesting that Jamie Gertz was like my first like real crush on an actor.
It's like, yeah,
she's perfect.
Star.
Probably why I have a type. it's like definitely Star.
Like, yeah,
bohemian punk sort of.
No, yeah, definitely. I think for me, I remember there was a rental store. It was called Manrique Rentals, local rental store, and he would put up, I'm assuming it's a guy, he put up all the posters for all these movies. And I think I've mentioned this before, but I used to love looking at posters. That was like my favorite thing. One of the most striking ones is The Lost Boys, because it has that, all the characters are in black and white. It has all these young kids, dirty looking kids on it. And then has that striking red coming, you know, from the back of it. And it's just always so vivid. It was always in my mind. So even before even before I saw this movie, I already knew the poster. It was like melted into my brain. So I think at some point we did rent it and we watched it. And I remember being really terrified of this movie as a kid, because I was kind of a chicken shit. Because just the feel and the look, and it just was nothing I'd ever seen before. So upon rewatching it a million times after that on cable, I don't even think I finished watching it the first time. I think it was one of those movies where I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to go to sleep. <It's> like, you know, I was going to just pass out. So I did that a lot as a kid. We would go on like a Friday, rent whatever movies, and then come home, watch them. And then like I'd fall asleep at some point. That was like a big thing we did. A lot. But of course, I've seen this movie a million times, like on cable. Yeah. You know, it's one of those movies that if it's on, I'll stop and watch it wherever it is.
Yeah.
You know,
it's so good.
There's really no like bad part to this movie. It's just all kind of there. And now that I've gotten older, I can appreciate some of the more, people would call it cheesy, right? But some of the more in the moment styles of directing were, I can appreciate them, you know, more. So
it is definitely more, the more I watch it, the more I realize it is very also 80s music video style sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very
like that. Especially, and, now I'm also like, man, Kiefer Sutherland, his acting in this was like fucking top notch. Like, I didn't appreciate how much of a sociopath he was, I don't think.
And, you know, he was only 17 years old.
Yeah.
So, and he lied. He said he was 18. But as they were filming the movie, he I think, eventually turned 18. But, he was only 17 when he was cast.
So. Can you imagine that? Like, I can't. Here I am in my mid to possibly late 30s.
Yeah.
And it's like, I can't grow a beard like that. And my voice never dropped that low. So I don't understand how a 17-year-old can walk around looking that badass and just act that way.
Yeah, I don't know.
That
goes
so
still
mature and like crazy. just pure psychotic.
And I think that's one of the things. Joe Schumacher, in my opinion, is a director that is incredibly polarized. But when his movies are good, they're really good.
They're fucking.
And he has a lot of bad movies.
Mostly bad. I'm gonna say right now, mostly bad.
Terrible, bad movies.
Arguably,
but
this is the only good movie he did, and it's a fucking masterpiece. Like I keep saying, but
I think that when he gets this movie, and you know, when he gets a movie right, he gets a movie right. He definitely loved, you know, the youth shooting people. This movie, something I noticed this time I didn't notice before, a lot of the setting was almost like post-apocalyptic, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's like people everywhere, it's dirty, there's like bonfires, there's like all kinds of like, there's like a real like grittiness he shot, which juxtaposes against the beach setting, which kind of has, you know, you assume it's like this fun, everyone's having fun, vacationing, you know, partying, family stuff at a beach. But he, you know, shot it oppositely. He shot like very kind of authentic and gritty. And he has like all these like young, sexy, dirty kids in it and stuff like that. So he just got the tone and the look of this movie so right.
I'm going to, like, just so I can piggyback off of you saying the young, sexy kids. I always remember that one guy, the first other punk guy that pushes David away from grabbing or flirting with his girlfriend on the carousel. I always remember that guy being more like aggressive looking or whatever. And then I don't know why it was like in this run of seeing it. I was like, wow, they like cast somebody that was clearly their friend. He's kind of dorky, and then they try to really make him look like a hardcore punk, but he's just kind of a doofus. He was like overacting.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Hold on. Beer break.
So no. Yeah. I mean, and I love that. I feel like there's so many little, like, all the other little stories going on, like the other. The Corey meeting the Frog Brothers was interesting and kind of had like this fun comedy element. He did this incredibly well, in my opinion. He balanced the horror really well with the comedy, which, I mean, this movie ends on a joke, right? It ends like on probably one of the funniest jokes in of the movie, of most memorable ending because of it, right? And I think that the comedy too between the Corys and the Frog Brothers was like so spot on, because I think as a kid I gravitated towards more of that story, and as I got older I was able to appreciate the, you know, what Jason Patrick's doing with Kiefer Sutherland, Jamie Gertz. You can see that they're so young and they're about to, like, you know, they're gonna break out and be big stars and everything. So
yeah, because they definitely see they all came from nothing, especially Kiefer Sutherland, just like family of non-actors. Just kidding. Donald Sutherland's his father. this movie's fucking great. I'm trying to think. There's only one real spoiler, huh? There's only one big twist.
I don't think I worry about spoilers here.
Okay, because I was going to say it is fun to really rewatch and, like, you know who the head vampire is by the end of the movie.
Right.
But it is interesting how they do certain things. And I just, like, always forget that he says a line. Okay, so Max is the head vampire, right? At the end, he says, "Never invite a vampire into your house, silly boy. It renders you powerless," blah, blah, blah. And I just remember that seeming so cheesy. But then, you know, when you watch, like, the date and the second date, you're like, oh, fuck. That's cool. They did all the right things, but nothing was going to affect him because it was, like, fine.
They tried really hard not to give away that he was the head vampire.
Yeah.
But it's all there, you know, once, you know, when you're watching, it's all kind of there, that what's going on.
Yeah, because especially they give him the opposite 80s extreme wardrobe.
Like,
like the huge shoulder pads, like Max Headroom style attire, I guess.
Yeah.
Instead of being like super goth punk.
And I think it was kind of brilliant to cast Ed Herman in this part, because he doesn't look like a vampire.
No, he's right? So unassuming.
He looks nerd dad, you know, kind of very wholesome looking. So casting him as, you know, the head vampire was totally, you don't see it coming, which is another brilliant move, I think, by Joe Schumacher there.
I think that's why, like, I always thought it was John Lithgow, because I was like, oh yeah, it was like somebody that was so unassuming. Even though I will say John Lithgow in Ricochet is, like, fucking superb. And I guess also Cliffhanger, but I'm not going to say that's a great movie, even though it's okay. But yeah, he did fucking fantastic. Thorn and what was the name of the other dog?
I don't remember.
They
have IMDb's. The dogs.
Yeah, because I read in the credits that Thorn's real name was like, it was like, okay. Let's see. Let's find out. The burning question of this week's episode, aside from, even though Alex Winter was only, like, months away, not months, I don't know, like, years away from becoming famous for Bill and Ted. Like, why didn't they give him more dialogue?
Oh, you're right.
He's fucking fantastic.
He doesn't have any. Nanook. Nanook.
Nanook, yeah.
That was Nanook. That was another dog, yeah.
Nanook. And then Jimmy Capello is a beach concert star, is what they credit him as.
He still does shows. He just does that whole bit of playing sax and singing music.
I need to go.
People love it.
Did you know he was in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome? He is
really
credited as saxophonist. That's surprising. He's got a wide array of of roles there.
So we got a saxophonist?
Yeah, we got to find out when he plays again, and then we'll review Timmy Capello's live performance. Yeah, what a fucking phenomenal movie that I can only say is up there in my all-time favorite films.
Yeah, definitely. You know what? There is one thing. So they did this POV shot like overhead that's supposed to replicate them flying, right?
Yeah.
I found it kind of disjarring. Did you? Like, I was kind of, the way they like were moving that camera around, I'm not 100% sure how they did it. I'm assuming they did it by helicopter or something, but that would have been the only practical way for them to do it. It was a little like, I got a little seasick from it. That's just me this time. But I was like, why is the camera moving like this? It was all jittery. And I was realizing that's probably the sort of like MTV 80s style, right? Like the cutting and shooting and like,
yeah, they were 100%.
Because it was very fast. It even sped up some footage too. And it was cut that way, you know, at least early on in the very early beginning stuff. It was very MTV. I'm calling it that, but this just style I think was modern at the time. But a lot of that was birthed from that time.
It also had that weird sound effect, which I'm assuming was they sampled a bunch of bats squeaking or whatever that would go back and like around, and you're supposed to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a problem with it. Did you catch? Okay, so you know how Joel Schumacher is now an openly gay man, right?
Yeah.
Apparently, there's this big debate on whether Sam has a picture of Rob Lowe on his closet door. And there's a big debate as to whether that was supposed to be like subtextual about Sam's sexuality and him not being open about it.
Oh, you know, yeah. I did think that was a little weird. I did see it and think it was a little weird. But I didn't really like... To me, the way Corey Haim is playing it, it's very like just nerdy.
An innocent,
80s nerdy,
right?
Kid. Yeah. Yeah, innocent nerdy kid. Because at some point he's like showering and taking a bubble bath or something. Yeah. It's like they definitely are trying to portray it as like wholesome.
Yeah.
Right? Like very like... super young, still young, but you know, maybe almost not a teenager yet or anything.
Yeah, like they go to the boardwalk, so. And the first time Michael sees Star and he starts to follow her, I thought it was cute that he's like holding Corey's hand and like pulling him through the crowd. And Corey's like, where are we going, Michael?
Yeah,
Michael, where are we going? You're following that girl, aren't you? You're gonna try to find that girl, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah,
that's so cute. Yeah,
I think he's a little bit. He's just young. It doesn't like. I think he's also, because he's into comics and other nerdy thing, maybe like, you know, sex isn't quite a thing yet for this character. You know what I mean? It's not part of his life the way Michael is. You know.
Well, obviously, it's not
puberty.
Not even on his radar, because he would have definitely have kept the cool toxic masculinity gifts that his grandfather gives him all the time. His taxidermy fucking chipmunks and shit.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I thought that was funny. Like, what a fucking bizarre, wonderful character. What's the name of that actor? He's fucking great.
Bernard Hughes.
Bernard Hughes.
Grandpa.
His whole I don't know, like, when I first saw it as a kid, I just assumed he was just, like, an ex-vet, which he still might be. I think there's, like, some evidence to suggest he was, like, a Vietnam-era sort of guy. He's wearing his, like, bandana, very 80s style, wrapped around his head. Not covering his head, what do you call it? When you fold it up and you make it kind of karate style, right?
Right, yeah. Headband,
yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And then you get, like, all the fun little aside cues, like, he doesn't even bother to hide that he grows pot. But I guess, like, this house is, like, super far away from the main city on purpose. You find out why later.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you see all, like, the pot plants growing out of the kitchen window, like, behind it. It's like, okay, obviously he's a stoner. That's why he doesn't care to have a TV. He's fine with the TV guide. And, like, him and his whole, like, car thing where he's like, all right, you ready to go to town? And he, like, turns it off. Oh, you got to let her warm up a little. Yeah. All right, that was nice. And he, like, turns off the car and gets out. It's like, because one, he doesn't want to go to town because he knows what's there. And two, he's just happy being stoned at his place, making stuffing animals.
So did you, I read there's a fan theory about him. Did you read this?
Mm-mm.
About Grandpa? That there's the... Their opinion or whatever, their theory is that he is a half vampire, like Star.
Oh.
Because he always wears, so there's a couple of hints to it. He always wears sunglasses inside, like Michael. He's a taxidermist, and they say that the soda he doesn't want anybody to drink is animal blood.
Oh.
Because when after the ending, you kind of see him drink it. And he's always wearing his shades. So, and he never wants to go into town. So they're kind of like insinuating maybe that he was a vampire. He was a half vampire.
Wow, that's pretty cool. But there's several scenes where he's outside without his sunglasses.
Same. Yeah. There's, well,
I would say,
I thought that too.
I would say
I was going to say, yeah, go ahead.
The moments he's wearing sunglasses, I just assumed, oh, he's fucking high. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah. There's, Star doesn't wear sunglasses and neither does Michael. They're all half, quote unquote, half vampires, right? They're not like full-fledged.
Michael does end up wearing sunglasses. That's kind of, and I appreciate that his idea of like turning is just somebody that's just super hungover. Like, that's all it's like,
yeah. 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 What was it? But yeah, no, that was a fun fan theory or whatever. Similar to the one about Sam, the character, possibly being gay.
Yeah.
Too. That was kind of fun. But yeah, I mean, I think we also got to talk about a little bit also about Diane Wiest. Is it Wiest, right? Is that her name?
Diane, what?
The mom?
I thought it was just West, but yeah. Wiest.
It has an I in there. So, the eye's in a weird place.
She was fucking fantastic. I don't know why. Wiest. I think
she's an amazing actress.
When I was younger, even in college, I think I thought of her as being like the weakest one in the film. I didn't understand her choices, but now that I'm older, it's like, wow, these are some fucking great choices. Like when she goes into the video store and meets Max for the first time, that whole scene where he's like, well, what are you looking for? She's like, oh, I don't really know, you know, blah, blah, blah. She's like, are you looking for a job? And she's like, yeah, is it that obvious? I'm like, fuck, you know, like,
yeah.
It's like, oh my god, she's just embarrassed. She's like coming out of a divorce that she just wants a clean break from. I don't know. Yeah, she was fucking fantastic.
She, what is it? What is it? What is she playing here? This is a way to describe it. It's not wholesome. It's like she's playing kind of maybe naive a little bit. Naive mom.
I would say. Type. More a, because again, this time around, I caught more of her cues were very intentional. Like, she's trying to get information from Michael, and she's like, you know, we can still be friends, blah, 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 you know. And it's one of those things she's like, probably thinking, no, I'm aware of what he's probably doing, but he doesn't have to like go through this thing alone and then be confused or whatever. It's fine. I would say she's somebody that's trying to put on a fake sense of optimism, even though she's broken.
Yeah. Right.
Like, which is like very right. good this yeah, time around. Is. When I saw it, I was like, oh, wow, this is almost... There are moments where it was almost very heartbreaking for me because the way some of the scenes play out, I think most of the time you get annoyed by her. You're like, oh my God, she just doesn't fucking get it. But it's like, she's going through a lot already. You know, and then on top of that, there's right. people telling her, oh, there's like vampires. And it's like, you got to be fucking kidding me, kids. Like, life's already bad enough.
Yeah, I like, because if you're here... I want to describe her character arc as being like she's trying to get a fresh start because she clearly like left her husband or her husband left her, right? She's divorced and she's taking the kids. She's trying to move back home, you know, and I like so a scene I caught early on was that there's some like kids or something eating out of a trash can. And she mentions like, oh, let's give them yeah. food, right? Like she's very mom, right? And like you said, she has these scenes where she's starting over. She's needs a job. Oh, she's living with her dad again. What you just
said. I also, this time around, rewatching that scene where she's giving the kids food or whatever, I took that as that's who she was with that other husband. Just like she had to provide everything and that guy was a deadbeat. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Overly caring, always considerate of everybody's feelings and stuff. Like there's a lot of nuance yeah. here more than I think that she's bringing. I think she's bringing it to the character. Yeah. Cause I think you could have easily done like, oh, dumb, naive mom. You fell in love with the head vampire. Ha ha ha. Right. But I think that there's things that she's doing that I think are adding a lot of subtext to it and nuance to it. I think that is why she's one of the best actresses probably ever. So
I mean, there is like a couple of questions I had this time around too. Like, where was the grandfather when Michael started turning, right? But then I realized he probably knew what was going on and was like, I'm going to fucking stay away. And then at that's the end, true. During the fight, why he was all set up. He knew what was going on. He was like, fuck it.
Right. Because there are some things that he didn't know. He saw Max, right, in his house.
Yeah.
And then he saw her from his little taxidermy room and then he looked at him and then just closed the door. And you can easily dismiss that as, oh, I don't want nothing to, like, maybe he's playing it like, oh, I don't want anything to do with this. But there's, you can also interpret it as like, oh, I know who that is. I'm going to close the thing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to, like, exactly deal with him per se, you know? So I think there's a lot to infer with the grandpa character. But he was also confused when Max is wearing his sunglasses inside. He was like, oh, you had a long night with a girl too, huh? Oh, or something along those lines.
Michael? Well, Michael, yeah.
Yes, Michael is... I think he just has that 80s style sex scene with a star.
I guess his facial cues were also kind of all over the place in that one scene too, right? Because it was like, oh, you had a long night too? And then at the end of it, he was like a little bit confused and then he just kind of like... excuses himself sort of, right? He was just like, well, I'm getting out of this, actually. There's some shit going
right.
down.
Because
he's gone the rest of, like, until almost the end, basically.
Yeah, to the end. He comes in and saves him. So clearly he knew what was going on.
Can you believe this movie was shot in 21 days? It's like, I can, but, like, holy shit, that's a lot.
I mean... Yeah, I mean, yeah, that is actually not a lot of time to accomplish the things that they accomplished in this movie. Yeah.
Like, they must have been, like, either the longest days on Earth or these guys were just fucking nailing it, which I'm inclined to believe the latter. I mean, I'm sure there were long days, but...
You know. I mean, you also have to think like Joe Schumacher was probably very prepared. He's very prepared. He probably knew what he wanted. He's been directing movies forever. He probably already had an idea of how he wanted things to go. So he probably already knew what he liked and didn't like. And so didn't have to wait around on the director making a decision. Not that that happens.
No, you know, he knew exactly what he wanted. He was like, all right, there's going to be a party scene. I know it's not written, but this is the best way for Michael to see Star. And we need Timmy fucking Capello to be playing on stage. Oh, what do you want him to do? Don't worry about it. He's got it. Roll.
Roll. But we have it. Roll. Roll. Just go. Just go. Okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Good times.
It was really excellent. There's so many things to look at this movie.
So much going on.
Yeah. Yeah. We can.
But yeah,
we
should probably wrap this up.
Yeah, we can wrap it up.
I think the way we should end this is I need to tell my story. My story of the first time I met Kiefer Sutherland. This was many years ago now, and it was at a place called R Bar, which is in K-Town. And this was back in the day when he still needed a password to get in, which was a lot of fun. Which wasn't hard to find. You just had to like do a little bit of Google searching, and then eventually you might find the right password. I was in there, and it was right after they were using this house that I used to live in as a shooting location for, this is a little bit of fun trivia. So as a shooting location for a sketch group called The Good Neighbor, which is the start of people like Kyle Mooney of SNL fame now, and like everybody knows who he is, and his friends, and, The kid from Jurassic Park, the one that Sam Neill does that Velociraptor like sort of moment with at the beginning, is now a full grown adult and he's in this show too. And I was like, this is a fucking bizarre thing, but it was like such a long day of shooting. There's fucking equipment everywhere. We didn't really know what we're getting ourselves into when we offered up the house, and then, which is like my bad, I guess, but. I go to R Bar with a couple of the guys, and I was like, fuck it, I just need a drink. And we go, and it's like, nobody's really there. And out of nowhere, we see Kiefer Sutherland walk through the fucking door. And he immediately goes behind the door and makes himself his own whiskey drink. And I was like, wow, he just does whatever the fuck he wants. This is kind of badass. And, I remember, one of our friends, Ali, went to go talk to him. But by that point, I was like really tired and I was like, oh, I'm just ready to bounce. And I was leaning up against a pole next to them and they were talking. And I just kind of looked down and our other friend, Colin Christopher, was talking to him too. And I didn't see that they fucking walked out. Like they didn't tell me anything. They just were like, okay, goodbye. And they left. And I turn and look up. Like I was literally just waiting for him to finish talking so I could bounce. And they leave, and I was like, oh, shit, they're gone. And I turn to see that they're walking out the door, and I turn and look towards Kiefer. And he, like, turns and sees me, and he goes, hey, how you doing, man? My name's Kiefer. And I was like, yeah, brother, I know who you are. Lost Boys is, like, one of my all-time favorite films. It's so fantastic. You're so wonderful. And he just kind of, like, he was obviously a little bit drunk. I'm being nice here. He looks at me and he just kind of like gazes at me in a very, I couldn't tell what his emotion was. And then he whispers in my ear, God bless your soul, brother. And he gives me the strongest bear hug on earth. And I was like, okay, it was really nice to meet you. I gotta go. It was just like, I want to say A, probably one of the most bizarre interactions I've ever had with a person at random, but B, also like endearing and sincere. He seemed so like, oh my God, thank you. Thank you for not remembering me for fucking 21 or whatever.
Yeah. Should we, in the, we'll, eventually we will tell the story about the other celebrity that grabbed your love handles?
Oh, is man. Well, we have to like,
we should talk about
find something that she's in that's horror related, I guess.
Yeah, but that's yeah, we'll save for
I was
time.
Totally getting hit on and I didn't do anything about it because I didn't know what to do. All right.
John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones.
Schumacher's The Lost Boys. 9.8 sexy spooky bones.
Yeah, I'm going to do the same. This was really fun to revisit. I'll do 9 sexy spooky bones as well. Just a great movie. I'm so glad we had it part of our summer series. So, it's no... as we reflect on our hot, sexy death summer here, we'll have more stuff coming down like this. So, keep a lookout.
Yeah, don't worry. We're going to fucking torture ourselves on for Halloween month for you guys again.
Don't worry. Yeah.
Don't you worry. We'll watch an entire run of another series of like one good movie and a shit ton of terrible ones.
But see, now you can say you're an authority on it, like you were saying earlier before we were recording.
Yes,
you
could true.
Put these punks in their place and tell them no, Halloween is terrible.
It's like no, didn't they do this in Halloween, blah blah blah. I'm like, no, they sure didn't, because trust me, I'm not gonna forget this crap, dude.
Just have a weathered, stoned look on your face. No, yeah, I've seen them all.
Yeah. Lit cigarette in my mouth, take one drag, hack up a lung, throw it on the ground, put it out. Let me tell you about Michael Myers. Old Mikey over here started off. Still looking upset. And then he was a hand model for a couple of movies.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So this is why these series are important. It's good work. Doing the Lord's work. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening, and as always,
thou shalt stay spooky.